Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Jim. We're here on Thursday this week rather than Friday because I got some things going on Friday, so here we are. Thursday is Friday. How about that?
And, Bob, we love to start the show with listener questions. This one comes from Henrik B. In general, Bob covers mostly U.S. and Canadian equities. What is Bob's view on emerging markets for the rest of this year?
Oh, yeah. That's what we can call lower quality stuff, and the lesser exchanges have been whacked a few times this year already. So it's going to be with the main theme that the senior indexes in the U.S. were likely to, well, coming out of the hit down to November, we just called for a counter-trend rally out to, or, you know, around March. And then also April can be sometimes a happy month for equities seasonally. So give ourselves some elbow room and maybe things would be okay through mid-year. And then perhaps after August start to turn ugly. That's the time where you can find, if there's going to be a credit crisis, it's usually discovered in the fall. Now, as to emerging markets, these things are going to be orphaned. It's like emerging debt bonds and junk bonds and this sort of stuff. So you can get trapped in that. I would be long gone from that. It's the only thing, as I've been outlining, if things are okay through to mid-year, and you're long, whatever you're long, for an okay market, or the risk-reward ratio is not very good. So, yeah, emerging markets will be vulnerable.
The second half of Henrik's question, if the U.S. dollar appreciates in the second half of the year, as is Bob's view, will emerging market stocks drop since they often tend to be negatively correlated to the U.S. dollar?
Yeah, that's for sure. I saw one just a little while ago. Argentina had uttered something about wanting to trade with China in the yuan, however they pronounce it, the Chinese currency. And there's been kind of a theme lately of knocking the U.S. dollar, but in reading the article, the problem with Argentina is they don't have enough U.S. dollars. So thus there's been really quite a program in the last month or so against the U.S. dollar as being the senior currency. And we might as well do a little editorial here. The financial markets choose which is going to be the financial center with the senior currency. And you can go back to when Holland was the financial and commercial giant, and Amsterdam was the financial center, and Guilder was the currency. And then in the early 1700s, England with London became the most viable financial center, and the action just shifted to where sterling was the senior currency and London was the financial center. And then somewhere in the 1930s and 40s, it shifted over to where New York was the financial center, and the dollar is the senior currency. So, and to have a communist country being considered as a potential senior currency is just absolutely absurd. I mean, it just ain't going to happen. And what will a major contraction do to New York as the financial center and the dollar is the senior currency? Well, the financial markets are going to get roiled, of course, and worked over, but we have found that in any post-bubble contraction, the senior currency usually goes up. So, and that's relative to other currencies and relative to most commodities. So, yeah, the next few months are going to be very interesting.
Now, our next question comes from Finn. He says, Dear Bob, I listened to two charts. One said in the early 1900s, platinum was five times higher than gold. Can we go there again?
Yeah, I don't comment on platinum. Uh-huh. I've never seen any reason to comment on it. So, but there's quite a contingent out there that follow platinum, so I'm not prepared to comment on platinum at all.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other question, when gold was locked to times U.S. dollars, there was no free price making. Now, it says it looks like interest rates are given by central banks, and I see all these charts flatline gold. How good is gold going to be? Is it just dead money?
I think the major theme is changing, and I've written a piece on it. So you go back to the 1960s, and that's when inflation, you know, the U.S. was started issuing bonds like crazy, and it was on a gold convertibility thing, sort of a gold standard, and they were losing gold, so they went off of gold in 1971, and then you've had a trading market for gold. And the price of gold in U.S. dollars, of course, the gold bugs beginning in the 1960s played it right, that, yes, dollar down, gold stocks up. But what you've got here now is in the post-bubble contraction, the real price of gold, as deflated by the CPI or by inflation, trends up. So you take that one step further and take gold and divide it by the CRB, so you're then relative to a basket of commodities. And then it even gets better when you take gold and divide it by crude oil. And we know that in a mine and milling and all that sort of stuff, that about 60% of the costs are energy and energy related. So here you are, the cost of crude oil has fallen relative to gold over the last few months, and that should be a plus for their earnings, because they're things. So the way to look at gold in a post-bubble contraction is to look at the mining costs relative to gold, and that, as I said, you can do that against the CRB or against crude oil, more specifically, and keeping track of their costs. So, but what I think is going to happen is that in the post-bubble world, the very careful money goes to the most liquid items, which are shorter than one-year treasuries in the U.S. dollar. So that puts in a bid for the U.S. dollar. And then also another liquid item of importance is gold. So that puts in a bid for gold. So I don't see much of a change in gold's price in U.S. dollars terms. And here you have the whole of the gold bugs community. Their whole thesis is based upon buy gold because the dollar is going to crash, which makes that form of positioning a speculation in foreign exchange. Whereas if you look at it from an earnings side and have a forecast for a probability of earnings increases based upon costs of gold mining going down, then you're looking at an increase, a stream of increasing earnings. And when you're buying earnings, you're an investor, not a speculator. So this, the old world of recommending gold stocks because the dollar's going to crash, that is coming to an end. It may take that whole community of gold bugs many years to figure it out. In the meantime, if you've done your homework historically, you can get on the right side of the gold market. And that work we did in June a year ago on gold divided by commodities, that study in June looked forward to a timing on it that probably the low for the gold stocks would be in the fall. And indeed, yeah, November cleared the market, and the the GDXJ has gone up. And nice rally, and became overbought some weeks ago and is sort of getting corrected here now. But this could be just the start whereby the gold stocks, in not just going up, they could be outperform on the rallies. They could be outperforming the S&P. So if you're a fund manager, sort of an aggressive fund manager out there, and you see a couple of quarters whereby the GDXJ has outperformed the S&P, and a hotshot fund manager is going to have to get in the game. So just the rise in the gold stocks outperforming the S&P could bring in some institutions that would otherwise never look at the sector. So that's ahead of us. And the advice on gold stocks is to buy the dips. And we've got the technical equipment for identifying the buying points. So that's good.
We'll be taking a look at headlines next with Bob Hoy.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Bob, some of the headlines that caught your interest today. The first one, UK interest in new electric vehicles crashes by 2/3.
Oh, yeah, I guess there's a little reality coming into, let's not call them electric vehicles, let's just call them battery vehicles. Because you've had electric streetcars and electric trains and electric trolley buses and all that stuff for ages. And these are just the mania to have battery-powered cars and other vehicles. So, yeah, that's interesting. And they're damned expensive. And very, even with subsidies, they're very expensive. So you've got the governments taking ordinary taxpayers' money and subsidizing the people who are wealthy enough to buy a battery car. So, it's been crazy. But that has been accompanied by the realization that the hot commodity with this has been lithium, and it soared up to 600,000 in November, and now it's down to about 130,000. And in March, the major Chinese producers got together and said they would put in a floor price of 250,000. So the price of lithium since November has fallen in half, and it's destroyed the idea of having a support price at $250,000. So the electric or the battery vehicles and the lithium was just one of those crazy events that you can get with a financial bubble.
Now, England is has been testing charging lanes for wireless EV charging, and apparently they don't work well in wet weather. Well, who has more wet weather than Britain or, say, Vancouver?
Right. we shouldn't laugh, because I just saw a video recently about anywhere you get too much rain and battery cars are parked outside, or if you get a flood, you get fires. And those things can, even without insult, can self-ignite. So it's been a form of madness, and fortunately, they can get over it. But if the authoritarians get their way and really force, as they hope to, a huge increase in battery cars, you take a look at the time it takes to charge one of those things, and whereas nowadays an ordinary service station with gasoline pumps and all that sort of stuff will take up just a corner on an intersection and a block. But if you've got everybody sitting there for a few hours charging up, service stations for battery cars, it'd have to be at least a half a block in size. And where the hell are you going to be pay for that kind of real estate where it's needed? So it's impractical financially and highly dangerous physically with these battery cars, as I say, self-igniting and blowing up. And as the fire crews have been trained, you just have to put water on them for hours and hours, huge amounts of water. You're just trying to keep the whole thing cool. And then even a day or so later, if you take the wreckage off to a wrecker, it can suddenly flare up and fire again. So, I think that practical is coming back, and we can get away from these expensive and dangerous toys.
Well, an article I see here, the fastest you can charge an electric car is 20 minutes to 1 hour to 80%. But most vehicles right now do not accept fast chargers.
Yeah.
So I guess if you charged it at home overnight, it would be the only solution.
I think that's probably practical.
Yeah.
As practical as you can get with it.
But most apartments and condos don't have charging stations either.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, yeah. Another headline that caught your eye, four reasons why investors expect the U.S. dollar to keep sliding. Why is the greenback on its way down, do you think? Or is it?
Well, it's been weak. With the crisis, last year's crisis, of course, the DX soared up to 114 in the fall with the crisis, became extremely overbought. And then as the crisis eased and everything looked fine, then the DX traded down to below 101 in January, becoming very oversold then. And the and also January for the DX can be a seasonal low. So since then, it looks like it's building one of our 5 to 6 month sideways pattern that when it completes, it could lead to a pretty good rally, and it's not completed yet. So the probability is that in a post-bubble environment, as we mentioned, the senior currency becomes chronically strong. And then just technically looking at the chart, it's building a pattern that could lead to another nice rally.
Headline, commercial real estate woes run deeper than in past downturns.
Yeah. Yeah, that's saying something. Sort of, yeah, it's serious out there, and it's trapping some of the big names in the real estate game.
Is that because the office towers are empty because people are still working at home?
Oh, well, I saw one in San Francisco that an office tower, 20-plus stories in prime area in downtown San Francisco might have sold for $150 million a few years ago. I think somebody is offering $25 million, you know. Don't quote me on those numbers. I'm just going by memory here. So, yeah, and it's partially empty because downtown San Francisco is essentially unlivable. So,
well, according to Wolf Richter, who lives in San Fran, he says downtown San Fran's a ghost town.
Sadly, it probably is. And then, of course, the same movement has trashed downtown Portland and downtown Seattle. So, fortunately, it hasn't hit downtown Vancouver. I mean, downtown, the downtown East Side residence area has always been the down-and-out side of Vancouver for as long as I can remember. But we don't have the physical destruction and burning of buildings that occurred a couple of years ago in Portland and in Seattle, for example.
Headline, record high Manhattan apartment rents may not save Blackstone from default.
Yeah, and Blackstone is a very big name in investing, and here you are. It goes the other way, and the institutions that place their money into Blackstone want to get their money out, so then Blackstone has to sell some property. And as we've seen, the bids are not too strong for various classes of real estate.
Billionaire Drunken Miller is shorting the U.S. dollar after missing last year's rally.
Yeah, Drunken Miller, he was with George Soros ages ago with Quantum Fund, and then in the first part of 2000 with the dot-com bubble, younger portfolio managers at Soros's shop were making huge on these, and later on Druckenmiller confessed that he couldn't stand it and got in right at the top. So then I think he was encouraged to leave, but then with his reputation and fundraising abilities back to having, you know, billions under management and getting the fees from that. But it's interesting that he's bearish on the dollar for the usual reasons, which is differences in interest rates between, say, Europe and the U.S. And then he repeated the business about people wanting to trade in the Chinese currency and stuff like that, which is pretty standard stuff. So I think he's going to miss another rally, the next rally in the U.S. dollar. So.
Bob, always a pleasure chatting with you.
Jim, good to be with you, and we look forward to next week.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy, the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He welcomes your questions sent to info@howstreet.com. Find us on Twitter at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.